the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. It's good to be with you. We've got 2 hours to talk about the things that matter most. And let you know a little bit of a secret. My 25-year-old daughter had her second baby today. Beautiful, beautiful. 9-pound, 1-ounce Rosemary Emanuela. And 21 inches long. I tell you, the kid has got hair. I don't know where she got the hair. Kind of nappy looking. You know? Big set of pipes, too. I think this kid's going to end up taking on Jennifer Hudson in just about 25 years. Anyways, Alexis, my daughter, who has worked with me here at Ave Maria Radio now and then, congratulations to her. Beautiful, beautiful time we had this morning. The whole family turned out. No, not. We weren't there when she was delivering in the same room. We were outside the room. But we all got together right afterwards. It was fun. But the reason it comes up today is because I'm in a bad mood. Let me tell you why. I'm in a bad mood not because I have another grandchild. I'm in a bad mood because Europe doesn't have any. There are no children in Europe anymore, including Poland, the homeland of John Paul II. The Holy Father, Benedict XVI, has just given what sounds like a Jeremiad to the European Union. He's playing Jeremiah because of their apostasy over there. And he's saying that their denial of their religious roots is a form of apostasy. And then I'm looking at other statistics here. Poland's fertility rate is now the lowest in the European Union at 1.23 children per woman. Now, I know I live in America, and I happen to grow up in a family where we liked kids. My mom had five, and she was also in foster care. We had about, I don't know, 25, 30 kids come through. And, you know, I realized some people like kids more than others, and they just get a kick out of them. They temperamentally like to be with them. But Catholic countries like Italy and Poland, not able to reproduce themselves? It's just Spain isn't doing it. And you just have to say, what is going on? We've got a Europe that's not going to be liberal in the classic good sense of the word, where there's going to be liberty or an ordered liberty, and it's not going to be Christian. So, on this wonderful day, I'm forced to look upon a problem, which is not a small problem. The United States is going to have to show the way out of this, because I think, you know, Pope Benedict XVI's tears over Europe may be wasted. I don't see where in the world. And here, to make it worse, wait till you hear. The bishops aren't even getting behind the Pope on this. Now, give me this thing here. Where's the bishops themselves, here, they leave the Pope from Catholic World News. Pope Benedict XVI gave one of the most powerful public talks of his pontificate on Saturday, speaking to a conference of European leaders convened by the European Bishops' Conference, warning against the apostasy that saps the cultural vitality of the continent. The Holy Father said that Europe may be watching its twilight in history. It is unthinkable, the Pope continued, that the European Union can work effectively while ignoring the Christian foundation on which the continent's society was built. Well, okay, so the Pope gets up there with, you know, good, strong language. But the Conference of Bishops in Europe comes out with a tepid, Christianity in water kind of statement, vague, marking the 50th anniversary of the Rome Treaty that formed the basis for the European Union. And its banality is in striking contrast to the prophetic message of the Pope. Well, we're going to talk about it. There is a lot to analyze here. Kishore Jayabalan will be joining us. He's been one of our go-to guys when it comes to the European Union. So he's going to be joining us. Also today, we will have a great time with Father Frank Pavone. It's his chance to talk about his most enduring spiritual lesson. He'll join our series. And in the second hour of today's program, our friend, canon lawyer Ed Peters, will be joining us on the issue of annulment. There are some stories out, Reuters stories from Italy that, well, here's one. You got to hear it. Smoke gets in his eyes. Too much of it. So he asked the Roman Catholic Church to annul his marriage when his wife refused to kick the nicotine habit. And then there's another big problem in Italy. I guess Italian men end up becoming mommy's boys or mamoni. They can't cut the psychological umbilical cord. They live with their moms until their 30s and 40s, even when they're making good money. And then they try to get married, and they just do a lousy job of it. And so now their wives are asking for annulments because these guys don't have the psychological maturity. They have a morbid dependency upon their moms. It's a crazy world. Anyways, Father Frank Pavone is going to be in the middle of this, so we will definitely have sanity somewhere along the next 2 hours. I'm Al Cresta. Let me make room for maybe the news will even sound good today. Nick Tom takes us through those headlines.
My apologies for a lack of a microphone in the studio. People who work at the White House are deeply saddened by news that presidential spokesman Tony Snow has suffered a recurrence of cancer. Holding back tears today, Deputy White House spokeswoman Dana Perino told reporters the shocking news.
Tony called us this morning and informed us that despite all of our best hopes and expectations that his doctors unfortunately learned that the growth was cancerous and there has been some metastases, including to the liver.
Perino said he is a fighter and is optimistic about a full recovery. Perino said Snow loves the job and plans on returning. President Bush, who talked with Snow on the phone this morning, said he is upbeat and he's not going to let this whip him. Bush noted that Snow is well-loved in the White House and he's looking forward to his return. British Prime Minister Tony Blair has warned that efforts to secure the release of 15 Royal Navy personnel held by Iran will enter a different phase if diplomatic moves fail. Paul Burge reports from London.
Tony Blair said the British government was trying to pursue the matter through diplomatic channels and make the Iranian government understand that the 15 British sailors had to be released. If this failed, he said, the incident would move into a different phase. Iran says it's questioning the British sailors to determine if their alleged entry into Iranian waters was intentional and whether they were spying on Iran. The British Foreign Secretary, Margaret Beckett, said that there could be no charge of espionage made against the Navy personnel because they were in Iraqi waters.
You ask whether there is a risk of them being charged with spying. I hope that you are aware that we are very clear that they were in Iraqi waters when they were detained.
The whereabouts of the detained sailors has not been confirmed, but an Iranian foreign ministry spokesman said they are all well and have been treated in a humane manner. Paul Burge, London.
Picking up where his father left off, Christopher Tolkien has completed work on a novel that should have Lord of the Rings fans rushing to bookstores. The Children of Húrin will be released worldwide next month, some 89 years after J.R.R. Tolkien first started working on it. According to the Independent newspaper, the book is described as an epic story of adventure, tragedy, fellowship, and heroism. The novel is illustrated by artist Alan Lee, who won an Oscar for art direction on the film version of The Lord of the Rings. Christopher Tolkien used his father's notes to complete the work he left unfinished upon his death in 1971. The days of scrambling for 2- and 3-cent stamps after a rate increase may soon be a thing of the past. The United States Postal Service has unveiled the Forever Stamp, which features the Liberty Bell and will be available starting April 12th. Tad Kelly, spokesperson for the U.S. Postal Service, says this new stamp is something consumers will appreciate due to its lasting value.
What we have developed here is a very convenient stamp. It's a consumer innovation where that stamp will hold its first-class rate value regardless of the increase in stamps over the coming years.
The Forever stamp will be available 1 month before the rate increase goes into effect. Kelly explains that May's rate hike is based on increasing gas and energy prices. And now your fascinating fact for the day. The first year that Americans ate more margarine than butter was 1957. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now, Kishore Jayabalan, director of the Acton Institute's Rome office. He has served in the permanent observer mission of the Holy See to the United Nations in New York City. He has worked for the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace at the Vatican. And for 5 years, he served as the Holy See's analyst on sustainable development and arms control. He was baptized, confirmed, and received First Communion from John Paul II, April 6, 1996, in St. Peter's Basilica. Kishore, good to have you back.
Hi, Al. How are you?
I'm miserable. I'm very unhappy. I'm looking at these stories, and I'm saying, tell me it's not true. Tell me that the Pope didn't get up there and give a Jeremiad to the European Union leadership, and then he wasn't backed up by the European Bishops' Conference. Tell me I've misunderstood.
Well, I can't say you misunderstood. I think you understood very well what exactly happened. The difference in the two messages is quite striking. The Pope's message was very hard-hitting, especially on, you know, if you think in terms of Vaticanese and the way usually popes talk to these kind of organizations. And you compare that with what the European Bishops' Conference statement said, you would think they were talking about two different realities.
So the Pope speaks the language of apostasy, or he warns, let me put it, say, he's warning that Europe is sliding into apostasy, that it's lost its sense of story, it's meta-narrative, it's roots in its Christian formation. And he sees this as a huge loss. The European bishops don't see it that way. They see it as what? We're all humanists now?
Yeah, I would say part of the problem must be the way bishops' conferences are structured and the way they operate in general. You have to remember that this COMECE, this European Union Bishops' Conference, is based in Brussels. They go to all the meetings. They're surrounded by all these European bureaucrats and parliamentarians and all the people that are, I hate to say it, but are part of the problem. And, you know, they must become kind of immune to the reality of what's going on, yeah, being stowed away there in these institutions and in the meetings. I know. I was in New York at the UN.
Yeah.
And I know how easy it is to kind of go along to get along.
Yeah.
But thank goodness the Pope is there to kind of shake the cobwebs out of these guys' heads.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at what the Pope said, almost everything he said about Europe was negative. I mean, he really lowered the boom on today's Europe.
Right.
And if you read the European Bishops' Conference statement, you think everything's going fine. There might be some problems on the fringes and things, but overall, things are pretty hunky-dory. And I think anybody who's been in Europe or pays attention to what's going on over here has to agree with the Pope more than with the European bishops on this one.
What evidence does he point to that Europe is lost its spiritual foundation, or it's rejected its Christian heritage, or that it's gone way off trajectory?
Well, I don't think the Pope has really given evidence. He's not trying to make a policy statement. I think the Pope has a pretty good idea of what the spiritual temperature is, and it's not something you can really quantify.
Mm-hmm.
I think he looks at the way Europe was united in the beginning, from the end of the Second World War, and what its goals were, what its ideals were, and he sees what today's Europe is, and you can see the big gap between what was promised 50 years ago and where we are today.
Many people
don't
realize.
And I don't think it takes any kind of social science to prove that.
It might help, Kishore, if you point out that there were some outstanding Catholic leaders after the Second World War, Konrad Adenauer, for instance, and major Catholic statesmen, when we don't see people of that stature today. Is that right?
I don't think so. I mean, that doesn't mean to say that there aren't good Christians in Europe. It just shows that the good Christians in Europe are probably intimidated, are kind of being pushed to the margins, and aren't playing a role in the formation of Europe as a continental-wide entity. I would say that, if there's one thing that I would point to as to why Europe has lost its way, is that, if you think about the last 50 years, the European welfare state has just grown and grown and grown and shows no sign of being turned back. And that must sap the will not only of Christians but of anybody who's trying to make a go of it over here.
Mm-hmm.
When the state and the government are kind of like telling you how you're going to live your life, what it's going to be like from cradle to grave, it's hard for people to kind of take their lives seriously when everything's being provided for you. And I would say that Christian Democrats and the Christian Democratic parties may have been responsible for some of this, but that doesn't mean that they can't find their way and get out of this trap.
So you think that there's England went through a major shifting in its understanding of its economy and the soft socialism that they had during the Thatcher or before the Thatcher years. Have we seen any restoration of Christian faith and vibrancy in England once they began to chip away at the welfare state in England?
Well, certainly not among the Church of England. But if you look at the way the British economy has grown and has attracted new immigrants, I would say yes. There are stories coming from Great Britain about the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church in the United Kingdom, reawakening, partly because of immigration coming from places like Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are filling the churches again. Roman Catholicism is growing, actually, as a result. But on the other hand, the Church of England, which is, of course, much more the establishment church, it's the national church, is just spinning out of control.
Mm.
So I would say that there could be positives from economic growth that kind of reawaken all kinds of energies, including spiritual energies. But, it's a little bit more of a complicated story than just, saying cut back on taxes and regulation and the faith will come back. But I think that there is something to do with the human spirit and human initiative, which is going on here.
I agree. I think one of the early attractions of the Christian church in the second and third and into the fourth century, before it was regularized under Constantine and then really became formalized under Theodosius, I think one of the great attractions was that it cared for its own. It was a voluntary society that served the people. It wasn't a matter of government taxation. And I think today, when Caesar takes over the function of people helping or caregiving, I think it actually does begin to emasculate some of the church's appeal.
Sure, I can see that every day. A place like Italy, which is full of creative and talented people, the way society is structured now in many parts of Europe is that they just take away any kind of initiative, and they also make it very difficult for people who do have initiative. You're almost forced to go either underground, break some kind of regulation or tax code, or you leave. You go to places like North America or China or now India or all kinds of places where people are allowed to kind of get on with their business and enjoy the fruits of their labor. And unfortunately, Europe, with some few exceptions, places like Ireland and Spain are better off, because they seem to have learned the lessons that the rest of the world has learned.
What about this mommy's boy thing in Italy? I'm going to talk about annulments in the next hour of the program. And I'm looking at a Reuters story saying that there are many women going seeking annulments now because of a morbid dependency that their husbands show on their mothers. Italian men stay living with their mom in their 30s and 40s, and that they don't make the transition to marriage very well. Is that true?
I think it is. There's an Italian word for that. If someone is called a mamone. A big mama's boy is the word.
Okay,
somebody who lives at home, and even sometimes after they get married, they move in, and the spouse moves in, and they enjoy mama's cooking, I guess, for a little bit longer.
That's okay.
But part of the problem, though, I mean, it is hard for somebody in their early to mid-20s to kind of go out and make a go of it on their own, as I said before. You know, all the kind of structures are kind of set up against them. It's very hard for companies over here to hire young people and to fire them easily. So that kind of makes it much more family-oriented, which I guess, could have some positive effects. But, you end up hiring people that you trust and that are going to be around and are dependable, and you just can't take a risk. And it's part of this risk averseness, which I think is also affecting the state of Christianity in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not willing to take a risk, on hiring somebody or on starting a new business, why is somebody going to take a risk for God and then really put their life on the line and turn it all over to Him?
Well, this leads to another issue which many have talked about, and that is the fertility rate in Italy. In Poland, I just heard, the fertility rate in Poland is the lowest in Europe.
It's bad. I mean, you can't say it's necessarily tied to religious attendance in some places. That's what it shows me. It shows that there's something else going on besides people just going to church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What is it? Is it fear of the future? Is it?
Well, I think we can return to the Pope's speech over the weekend to see what he says about this idea of being the twilight of history, of being indifferent to the future, of losing confidence in the future, of not wanting to take a risk and really give of yourself for your children and for future generations. I think that mentality is unfortunately crept into the everyday life of many, many Europeans. You can call it materialistic, you can call it hedonistic, you can call it a number of different things, but the results are clear. We're seeing that as the populations dwindle here, and pretty soon it's going to get to a point where it's going to be pretty much impossible to recover.
Well, the Pope asks, how can they exclude from Europe's identity an essential element like Christianity, in which a vast majority continues to identify themselves? Is it surprising, then, that while it aspires to be a community of values, modern Europe seems to question universal and absolute values? A community that is built without respect for the authentic dignity of human beings, that forgets that each person is created in God's image, ends up not doing anyone any good.
Those are very strong words, aren't they?
They're very strong words. I mean, this is a very sophisticated man. He's a man who does know nuance. You know what I'm saying? He's quite capable of being subtle if he needs to be. But he's chosen to just hit Europe with a 2x4.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think it's even more remarkable that he was saying this not to people who are European politicians or parliamentarians, but people affiliated with the European Bishops' Conference. So he's speaking kind of in-house. He's talking to people who are involved in the church, and I think he's trying to wake them up and kind of smack them around a little bit and say, wake up and get with it, because there's a lot to be done out here. And we don't need to be parsing over kind of policy issues so much, but really reinvigorating the spirit and acting like Christians in all aspects of European life.
Well, Kishore, thank you very much. Great talking with you again. We'll stay in touch. And my prayers, as I know yours are for the regeneration and renewal of Europe. Thank you.
From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call us toll-free at 888-503-8500. Get better results when you advertise. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by Attorney John Cece, PLLC. Have you ever wondered, what is probate court? Or, if I die without a will, does the state of Michigan get everything I own? Call John Cece for the answer. John is an estate planning attorney, and whether you have a plan you'd like to review or want to set one up, he'll help you decide what's best for you today and tomorrow. Remember, where there's a will, there's a way to protect your assets. Call John Cece today, 517-540-1272. That's 517-540-1272. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice.
Brother Rice High School, founded in 1960, fosters the spiritual, intellectual, cultural, and physical development of its students. Committed to academics, Brother Rice High School features new state-of-the-art classrooms and top-of-the-line technology, as well as advanced courses such as pre-engineering. College recruiters across the nation recognize Brother Rice as a premier institution, and graduates can be found in every field imaginable, from medicine, law, engineering, to even on the playing field. Promoting excellence through an environment conducive to lifelong personal growth, responsible moral choice, and critical thinking continue to be the foundation on which Brother Rice High School was built. For more information on how you can join the Brother Rice community, go to brrice.edu. That's brrice.edu.
This message is brought to you by Varsity Lincoln Mercury of Novi and Varsity Ford of Ann Arbor, proud supporters of Catholic education in southeastern Michigan. Visit them on the web at varsityautos.com. That's varsityautos.com. Or go to WDEO.net and click on advertising links.
And good day, I'm Al Tresta. A bunch of things came together as I was thinking, working on this broadcast today. One, you may have heard me mention, I'm working on a series of lectures on the world's debt to the Catholic Church. And it's a 13-part series, and I've worked on this various topics related to this theme for many years. But I'm not trying to organize it, and I'm focusing on the conversion of the barbarians. And so I've been spending a lot of time with the Huns and the Visigoths and the Vandals and, all these remarkable peoples who existed outside the boundaries of the Roman Empire. And so, the Huns come pushing in from the east, and the Visigoths move to the south, and eventually what ends up happening, of course, is that the Catholic Church prevails, and the barbarians, and they're very different, they're not all the same, but using the general term barbarians, they're tough material to work with. But out of those barbarians, we end up, of course, with the cultural entity that we call Europe. We end up with those great Gothic cathedrals. We end up with Gregorian chant. We end up with the scholastic theology in the High Middle Ages. We end up with the Carolingian Renaissance and the minuscule script. We end up with the land, agricultural land, being reclaimed through the work of various religious orders, including the Cistercians. We end up with the great Benedictine foundations, which form the economic basis for centuries forward in European progress and development. And so there's simply no denying the role that the Catholic Church plays in the formation of Europe. And if you say on balance, was the Catholic Church a force for good or ill regarding this landmass that we call Europe? There's no doubt. There's absolutely no question that you cannot talk about Europe without appreciation for the Catholic Church. So when the Holy Father gets up this weekend and says that Europe has lost its faith in the future, that it is perhaps in the twilight of its history, it's sad. It's terribly sad. And then of course, as I mentioned, my daughter has her second child this morning, and I'm rejoicing. It's just a beautiful. It's beautiful. Children are beautiful. It is. What's the old cliche? You know, every child is God's vote that the human race go on. And I believe that that is true. I think that the joy of embracing children is directly related to a sense of hope in the future and spirituality. And then you look at Europe and you say, even in Poland, where church attendance is so high, the fertility rate is the lowest of all the European countries. In Italy, it's way down. In Spain, it's way down. Now, in France, there's been something of a baby boom. They've made it a matter of government policy, so they've been managing to get more kids born in France. Don't know the details on it, but worth keeping in mind. So what role does Christianity have to play in the future of Europe? And that's what the fight's about. The Holy Father seems to think that this is something worth fighting over. The Conference of European Bishops seems to just be taking the whole thing in stride, not too excited one way or the other. And I'll have posted today at AveMariaRadio.net in the Cresta Guest Archives, I'll have posted a number of articles. Now, Nick, can we get all these things up? Okay, we can get all these up. I want this Louis Dupre article from Commonweal on the idea of Europe. And if we can get Keyshore's article up there on Europe, neither liberal nor Christian. Then, of course, these wire service stories from Catholic World News and Reuters. You should read these things and read Pope Benedict XVI's address. And while we're at it, too, let's get this juicy one up by George Weigel. You know, Europe's problem and ours. It goes back a few years, but still, it's very helpful. Very helpful article in orienting us. Look, there's big, very deep connection between America and Europe, and we don't want to find ourselves without some lifelines to the old land, so to speak. Well, since the beginning of the year, we've been continuing a series called My Most Enduring Spiritual Lesson, and we ask Catholic leaders to join us and to share with us their most enduring spiritual lesson. Coming up on the other side of this break, we're going to have one of our most enjoyable and enduring guests, and that's Father Frank Pavone, who just passed through town a few weeks ago and has agreed to spend time with us today. He's truly a warrior priest. He's become enemy number one for the abortion industry in the United States. But I want Father Frank just to sit down with us and share with us his most enduring spiritual moment. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on Cresta in the Afternoon.
The Reasons for Lent, Sacrifice, and the Resurrection has given you a thirst for deeper knowledge this season. Expand and broaden these horizons now at Our Lady of Grace Bookstore inside Domino's Farms. Some of your deepest questions may be answered in the diary of St. Maria Faustina Kowalska. Her diary has sold over 500,000 copies and has been read on Ave Maria Radio's Christian Classics. Father Christopher J. Walsh's approach to the sacrament is both traditional and contemporary in The Untapped Power of the Sacrament of Penance. Father Benedict Rochelle writes in the foreword that any reasonably literate and serious Catholic will enjoy reading these pages about the Sacrament of Reconciliation. There's also books, prayers, and activities for the family and children, all at Our Lady of Grace Bookstore at Lobby C of Domino's Farms. Our Lady of Grace Bookstore has all your spiritual aids, books, tapes, CDs, DVDs, and more to help make this Lenten season meaningful. Call 734-930-3747. That's Our Lady of Grace Bookstore, 734-930-3747.
Looking for a vacation that's a personal journey as well? Plan now to join Father Norm Naraki of St. Regis Church on a pilgrimage to Fatima and Lourdes. This will be Father Norm's ninth visit to Fatima and Lourdes. Depart October 8, 2007 for a visit to the countries of Portugal, Spain, and France. Worship in the basilicas of Fatima and Lourdes, visit the magnificent Cathedral of Burgos, and in lively Barcelona, Spain, see Antonio Gaudi's masterpiece, La Sagrada Familia. On most days, morning mass will be celebrated throughout your 9-day journey. Learn more about this fascinating Colette vacation by attending our travel presentation Monday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. at St. Regis Church, located on the corner of Lincoln and Losser in Bloomfield. To RSVP for the presentation or to request a detailed itinerary, call St. Regis' parish office at 248-646-2686. Then press 0. Again, the number to call is 248-646-2686. Then press 0.
Very good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, back for another, we got another half hour to talk about the most enduring spiritual lesson, the most enduring spiritual experience, most enduring spiritual moment of our friend Father Frank Pavone. Father joins us pretty regularly on this broadcast, and he's also a regular participant with Teresa Tomeo in Catholic Connection. He's president and founder of Priests for Life, active in the pro-life movement since 1976, America's bicentennial year. He was ordained a priest for the Archdiocese of New York by Cardinal John O'Connor, another pro-life champion, and served for 5 years as parish priest in Staten Island, taught theology at St. Joseph's Seminary and other institutions. He's an official of the Pontifical Council for the Family and the author of Ending Abortion, Not Just Fighting It. Father, it's good to have you back again. Thanks.
Hi. Well, Al, it's great to be back with you.
Well, tell me a story, huh?
You know, I thought about this topic. My mind went back to the early 90s. I was a parish priest, St. Charles in Staten Island, New York. And I heard that there was going to be a rescue taking place at an abortion clinic. And the exciting thing about it was, among other things, we didn't know where it was going to be. This was one of the fascinating things. Now, I had been already deeply involved in the pro-life movement, but the experience I'm going to relate today is what really galvanized me to get to the point of saying, an iron door is going to close behind me, and it's going to be, you know, all engines focused on this one problem of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So we get up this morning, I actually invited a few of my parishioners to come with me. I said in a sermon the previous Sunday, I said, we're going to go rescue some babies, and we don't know what's going to happen, but who's going to be willing and ready to come with me? So mm-hmm. a few brave parishioners came. We had to get up like at 3 in the morning and go over to the home of some of the local Staten Island activists. Never forget walking in there. People were arriving, embracing each other. Mm-hmm. Things were really quiet and dark. There was a kind of a hushed anticipation of the rigors of the day. And I never forget sitting down at the person's dining room table, and his wife came over to him and said, well, here's your rescue glasses. And he changed his glasses because he didn't want the good ones to get damaged.
Right. That is
so funny. So we're looking at this and we're saying, this is going to shape up to be quite a day. So then from there, we got into a car and we were given a little card. And it said where we had to go next. So we drove. And we drove to this, I think it was the shopping center of a mall, and there we were met by some other people who then gave us another card and say, okay, here's the second leg of the journey. This happened about 3 more times
mm-hmm.
until we eventually found ourselves at an abortion facility in Levittown, New York. And then it began, and people converged on this place, locked the doorways so that they could put themselves between the babies and the instruments of death. I was moved beyond description. I stood there. I was praying. Now, I was not among those sitting at the door. I would have done so. My pastor said, I need you back to say the weekend masses.
Sure.
Don't get thrown in jail.
Yeah.
You know? But I stood there and counseled the women who were delayed in getting in because the place was blockaded. But as the morning unfolded, It was just amazing because, you know, police arrived, helicopters were flying overhead. Eventually they brought buses through which they were going to cart off those that were getting arrested. They warned the people, get up and walk away from this door. And the spokesperson for the people said, we cannot get up and walk away from this door because if we do, we are allowing these children to go to the instruments of death. Right. We will not move.
And we're placing our bodies between the abortionist instruments of destruction and
yes.
those incoming children. And, you know, we were identifying with those children.
Precisely.
Take us.
And we're going to be quiet, and we're not going to give our names. And just like these babies are quiet,
mm-hmm.
you can't hear them cry. They don't have names yet themselves. Well, you know, the morning went on, and I saw these people get carried away one by one, including priests that I knew.
Interesting.
And onto the bus they went, and I'll never forget the scene of that bus driving away. I looked up into the windows of the bus. I raised my hand in a blessing, and I saw one of the priests I knew as well as the other people, and they had these gentle, peaceful smiles on their faces. These people had been through a rigorous morning. They were sitting out there for about 7-8 hours,
mm-hmm.
and nothing to eat, nothing to drink, you know, and just now facing arrest.
Right.
And they were filled with the joy of the Spirit.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It's amazing for many people that I've talked to who've been involved in rescue, as you describe, it was a watershed moment for them because
it was.
The forces of light and the forces of darkness were about as clarified for them as ever. I know that when I was involved in rescue, many of the people involved were not your typical 1960s style activist.
Right.
These were middle class people, you know, oftentimes grandparents or parents raising children,
right.
Law abiding, not interested in this kind of conflict.
Right.
But because they thought they truly had a reasonable assurance that they could save a life that day, they put themselves down between themselves and the abortionists, instruments of destruction, and they found themselves on the wrong side of the law.
Yes.
And that was shocking.
Yes. Very shocking, very absurd, really, and that absurdity and that conflict right there that you just put your finger on is, I think, what stirred my soul that day, and I said, you know, this is not abstract, this is
right.
not theoretical. Here's the culture of death right here.
Mm-hmm.
Good people are being dragged away, and babies are being dragged to death.
Yeah.
And this, I stood there and I said, this has got to stop. And I committed myself that day.
That was it.
To making this the utter goal of my life, to end this evil. And I tell you, the parishioners who were with me experienced the same kind of thing. In fact, I was with one of them later that evening at someone's birthday party, and we were at this party, and, you know, everyone was talking and laughing and, you know, greeting one another, and we were there, and we were, you know, sitting with the people conversing, but it's like we were in a different world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, are you kind of feeling what I'm feeling? It's like we're listening to all of this, but it's a step removed because we've been taken up into this deeper awareness that there's a Holocaust going on
yeah,
around us,
right.
and we've got to stop it.
Now, would Priests for Life have come into existence without that experience?
Yes, I believe so, because there were some priests. It was right around the same time as this happened to me that there were some priests in California who decided that they wanted to do something to encourage their brother priests to preach on the pro-life message. So that was the actual early beginnings of Priests
okay.
for Life, the first seeds. I joined up then, and then 2 years later, I became the first full-time director. But I was on this path already from my high school days. In 76, I went to the March for Life and got stirred, got awakened to the movement. But I don't know whether what then happened would have happened as quickly, which is namely that I literally felt soon after this incident that I could not go on with my life business as usual
mm-hmm.
without devoting my ministry completely to ending abortion. And, of course, now that has given rise not only to the expansion of Priests for Life, but to this new society where other
yeah.
young men are making the same commitment.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that whole experience of rescue has borne tremendous fruit in your life and in the lives of so many others.
Yes.
I wasn't even a Catholic at that time.
Is that so?
No, yeah. It was part of my experience in rescue drove me into the Catholic Church.
So, you know, that's another great fruit of
yeah.
rescue, isn't it? Catholics
yeah.
and Protestants were arrested together. They were they prayed together. They realized that they could pray together in ways that they hadn't imagined before.
Yep. Yep.
And there was plenty of time sitting around there to discuss, you know, the similarities and differences in
yep.
their faith.
Yep.
So drew a lot of people to the church. You know, this year, by the way, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of Rescue, and I know that there are going to be some events going on in different cities. So that's something for folks to be on the lookout for as the events
yeah.
get planned.
Yeah, definitely. Do you remember Bishop Austin Vaughn?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, I remember him telling the story of how he looked at, and this was one of his. If he were on this program today answering the same question, I'm sure one of his enduring spiritual moments was when he looked at his ring and he realized that the three people on it, Jesus, Peter, and Paul, had all been arrested and thrown in jail for standing up for what was right. And he,
right.
you know, and he saw this rescue stuff going on. And he said, "Wait a minute, what's holding me back
mm-hmm.
from fear of jail? Well, then why am I wearing this ring?" And he became a marvelous. Sign and example
yes.
and teacher and leader nationwide.
Now, did you get resistance from brother priests or from any bishops when you got involved in rescue?
As I got involved in that, no. Fortunately, at that time, Cardinal O'Connor was speaking out very strongly
mm-hmm.
in favor of what was going
mm-hmm.
on. He expressed his personal support for Bishop Vaughn. And I remember one column that Cardinal O'Connor wrote where at the end of the column he said, "Who knows, one of these days I might be sitting next to Bishop Vaughn in one of these rescues." So with the Cardinal's strong support, the priests were, you know, I mean, certainly there were priests who were, you know, not interested in this or maybe thought that we were kooks or were just, you know, as many are today, just apathetic and just, you know, you can't seem to light a fire under them. But they didn't go so far as to try to stand in my way or anything like that because the environment wasn't right, so to speak. We had strong support from the top, and that always counts a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let me come back to this again because you certainly are already committed to protecting the unborn. You've been active in the pro-life movement since 1976. Had been ordained. You'd been serving as a parish priest in Staten Island.
Right.
This experience, though, you went through a door here.
Yes.
And that door shut behind you. There was no going back.
Right.
Where do you think you, if this door hadn't shut, where may have you gone back to?
I think that I've always been interested in my studies, in my pursuit of academic
yep.
Advancement, and therefore I would have been very inclined, was very inclined, to move in the direction of possibly going for further studies as a priest and maybe teaching in seminaries.
Sure.
I very much wanted to do that. I wanted to go on for biblical studies in particular. And so had the diocese agreed to let me do that, I may have gone to the Biblicum in Rome and
mm-hmm.
come back and taught at Dunwoody there in New York. So that was one trajectory that I could have followed. But as you said, a door closed behind me, and it was you know, you come to a point. I think of it as an integration. You know, all, you know, my mental energies and physical energies, they were going in several different directions as a priest. I was
mm-hmm.
doing some teaching. I was doing the work of the parish. I was doing the pro-life work,
uh-huh.
and I had my personal interests and personal studies. But at that point, it was like a convergence, and all that energy and all that desire to do good focused in on this issue of abortion? And I said, yes. I said, this is big enough to consume my whole life. And felt, you know, you get to a point where you feel like there is no turning back. I can never, coming to see, you know, and see so closely what is happening to these babies and these women, you think to yourself, I could never just walk away now and say, well, yeah, I know they're killing babies, but I'm going to go off and do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that it's an irreversible point that you come to.
Now, the as I understand it, and this is just to help clarify this for me, as I understand it, rescue began to peter out when we no longer had any reasonable assurance that we could shut down a particular clinic and thereby save babies' lives. And then we
had
the Federal Access to Clinic Entrances Act, which raised, made it almost impossible to participate in rescue. And the pro-abortion folks were often getting to these clinics before we were.
Right.
And oftentimes the police were, which meant you couldn't really ensure or have any reasonable assurance of having that clinic shut down.
That's right. It was often no longer a question of being able to buy time. Even if in this experience I had, the clinic did open up later in the afternoon. But the point is that the whole morning had been saved, whereby then the counselors, and in cooperation with the local pregnancy centers, could talk with these young girls who had shown up for their appointments and convince some of them not to do it. And that was a big part of the strategy.
Yeah.
But yes, as you say, and then
these were not merely protests. I mean, these were interventions.
Right.
These were
it's intervention, right? I mean, we in the movement, we speak about our using our First Amendment rights, and we express our quote-unquote express our viewpoint. Well, that's part and parcel of American life, yes. But this is deeper than that. This is an intervention to save a life that we know is scheduled to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very, very... and it's not. And that's the distinction, too, between this and civil disobedience.
That's
civil
right.
disobedience, you make a point by breaking the law, maybe you block a street or something,
mm-hmm.
and you call attention to yourself and therefore to your message. But no, in this case, it's not breaking the law for the sake of breaking the law. It's going in to save a life, and not caring if in the process a trespass law is broken any more than you'd care if you saw someone drowning in a pool and you jump over the fence into someone's private property.
Right. Do you one last question for you? Do you think there'll be a time anytime soon where rescue will become a viable option again?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because as I go around coast to coast, I am finding a lot of young pro-life people saying we must do it again.
Yeah.
And the reason they're saying it is that the logic is inescapable. This is a real person? Well, then let's treat them that way.
The logic is inescapable. You're right. Father, thanks for your leadership, and thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
I value the time you spend with me, and I know our listeners appreciate you being up front and helping show them how to live consistently as a Catholic. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Bye now.
Father Frank Pavone, president and founder of Priests for Life. I'm Al Cresta.
Brother Rice High School, founded in 1960, fosters the spiritual, intellectual, cultural, and physical development of its students. Committed to academics, Brother Rice High School features new state-of-the-art classrooms and top-of-the-line technology, as well as advanced courses such as pre-engineering. College recruiters across the nation recognize Brother Rice as a premier institution, and graduates can be found in every field imaginable, from medicine, law, engineering, to even on the playing field. Promoting excellence through an environment conducive to lifelong personal growth, responsible moral choice, and critical thinking continue to be the foundation on which Brother Rice High School was built. For more information on how you can join the Brother Rice community, go to brrice.edu. That's brrice.edu.
This message is brought to you by Varsity Lincoln Mercury of Novi and Varsity Ford of Ann Arbor, proud supporters of Catholic education in southeastern Michigan. Visit them on the web at varsityautos.com. That's varsityautos.com.
or go to WDEO.net and click on advertising links.
Have you been thinking about a new career lately? Have you considered a career in church ministry? Detroit Sacred Heart Major Seminary invites you to prepare for a new career in ministry by enrolling in one of its diploma or degree programs in theology or pastoral ministry, youth minister, campus minister, pastoral associate, religious education director. These are just some of the many full-time positions that Sacred Heart graduates hold in parishes, dioceses, and apostolates across the country. Generous financial aid is available to help fund your education. Evening and satellite courses meet your busy schedule. And Sacred Heart is easy to reach from all parts of Metro Detroit. Begin your first or second career in church ministry by enrolling for spring term 2007. Hurry though, new student enrollment ends April 15th. Classes start May 7th. Call Sacred Heart Major Seminary, 313-883-8520, and talk with an admissions counselor. That's 313-883-8520.
And good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be taking calls. We want to hear from you. There are lots of questions people have about marriage, divorce, annulment, what's the relationship between them. And there are some bizarre stories coming out. Where is this now? This is just last month. Reuters, Phil Pallella, writing for Reuters, tells stories from Europe, Italy in particular, about a man whose wife refused to kick the nicotine habit. Apparently they had some agreement before the marriage saying that she'd give up smoking. She refused to give up smoking, and so he went ahead and filed for an annulment. Actually, he got an annulment to begin with, and then a higher court got appealed, thankfully, and a higher court said nonsense. There's also going on in Europe right now, apparently, a morbid dependence on parents. In Italy, where many men tend to stay at home until they marry, even if they make top dollar salaries, their wives are saying, look, these guys are not good marriage material. In fact, we should never have married them in the first place. Maybe the marriage wasn't valid. Do I get an annulment? Well, I'm sure your situations are more serious, and so Dr. Ed Peters joins us in the next hour, taking your questions on annulments.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tom. The technical engineer, Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To order your copy of this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you missed a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Reading the Bible is important to your spiritual formation, but many have difficulty reading while others feel they're too busy to sit down and read. The Ave Maria online store has a solution. The complete audio Bible from NAB. Dozens of Catholic scholars developed this contemporary version on 66 high-quality compact discs, and this non-dramatized version is read by award-winning narrator Eric Martin. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the online store to get your copy today. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild calendar is brought to you by Parish Publishing Solutions. St. Michael's Media will be showing the movie Padre Pio Miracle Man Thursday, March 29th at their studios in Ferndale. Bring your family and friends to learn more about this amazing modern saint. Entrance is simply a free will offering, and Ignatius books and DVDs will be available for purchase. Call 866-738-1207 for more details. All college students are invited to the annual Students for Life of Michigan Conference beginning Friday, March 30th at Ave Maria Law School in Ann Arbor. Cost is only $15 and includes an overnight hotel stay, meals, and great speakers like Attorney General Mike Cox. To reserve your place, call 313-580-9080. You can find many more events at our website, amcguild.org. Call Parish Publishing, 800-521-4486.
From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages.